Thanks for listening to the Best of Herd Podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday from 12 to 3 Eastern, 9 to noon Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and FS1. Find your local station for the Herd at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching Herd.
This is the Best of the Herd with Colin Cowherd on Fox Sports Radio.
Ah, here we go on a Monday. Thank you so much in unique circumstances for joining us. Live in Los Angeles, this is The Herd. Wherever you may be and however you may be listening, we are all over iHeartRadio. We are on Fox Sports Radio. We are on Sirius XM Channel 83. And yes, though not in the studio, we are on FS1 for the remainder of the week. Circumstances could change. We, as I said last week, hope to bring you some normalcy 1 hour from now, where Colin was right, Colin wrong, an NFL free agency edition. Joy Taylor is joining me. Now, you will not see Joy on television today. I can see Joy to my left. Hello, Joy.
Hi, Colin. Hello.
On my laptop, I've got to give great credit to Joy, our company. I'm by myself in a studio. My family's doing a lot of social distancing. All of us are. Occasional power walks with my daughter, but social distancing. I'm here in a studio by myself. We have a Spartan staff. Joy is by herself. Well, I don't know if she is by herself, but I can see her right now.
I am.
Okay.
None of
my business, by the way. I'm just saying. So I'm watching Joy. And so let's just start today. Again, Joy and I know in the big picture, our jobs are not that important, but if we can add some normalcy and some habit to all of your lives, you are doing me a great benefit. And I hope we're doing some benefit to you. So let me just start with this. I thought a lot about this morning. I thought a lot about the virus and sports, and it's obviously affecting everybody's lives, socially, business-wise. We now have a health crisis and an economic crisis at the same time. And this is not, as we've said for the last couple of weeks here, this is not a 2 or 3 month thing. It's going to be a spring summer thing. Hopefully by late summer, early fall, we can get our arms around this and the curve flattened. Social distancing is a real thing. Please adhere to the regulations in your state or province or wherever you are. I do not believe we're going to have NFL OTAs. Those are in late May. I don't think it's going to happen. My opinion has always been best case scenario is July. That's why I cross my fingers for the NBA, but I'm not very hopeful as I think about that this morning. But so how does that affect the NFL? Because at this point, everything I'm reading, I do think we'll have an NFL season. And I thought to myself, Lord, what a disadvantage. If you're a new coach with a new system and new coordinators with a young quarterback and you can't meet, what a massive disadvantage. In fact, let me give you a number. Last year, we had 8 new NFL head coaches. 8. One had a record of 500 or better, and that was with OTAs and with camps and with a full exhibition season. It is highly likely there's going to be no camps, and we could even have potentially an abbreviated preseason. So for me, I look at Joe Judge with the New York Giants. New coach, new coordinators, Daniel Jones is young, big disadvantage. Kevin Stefanski, Cleveland, smart guy. New system, can't meet with his players, can't implement it. Matt Rhule at Carolina, I think he's brilliant, and I love veteran Teddy Bridgewater. Unfortunately, no camps. Even if you're a veteran coach, Mike McCarthy, and a fairly veteran quarterback now. Dak's now, what, going to go into his 5th year? Disadvantage. Ron Rivera, who I think very highly of, with a young quarterback. I think Ron's excellent. Big disadvantage. And I thought this morning, there are really about 8 or 9 teams I wrote down where you've got a head coach who's been around, a quarterback who's got a couple of full seasons in him, and there haven't been a lot of what I would call coordinator changes or top assistant changes. Big advantage for, and let me read the teams, Seahawks and Niners, Eagles and Saints, Falcons and Ravens and Texans, and I think to some degree the Rams. But let me give you an example with the New York Giants, and I think they're getting better and better and better. But the Giants have a new head coach in Joe Judge who's never been a head coach, and an all-new system, and a young quarterback. Think about the defenses they're going to play. because it's much easier to implement a defense than an offense, right? Eagles twice, Seahawks, Niners, Browns, Steelers, Raven defenses, and the Bears. And a Tampa Bay defense that played very well at the end of last year. That's just bad news for the Giants. That is a decided disadvantage. So as I went through the standings this morning, and, you know, as things change, the more they stay the same, I thought to myself, I'm going to pick the top two teams in each division based on head coach quarterback symmetry and a lack of major coordinator changes. I think I got this right. So in the AFC East, that's the biggest change. No Patriots. Bills win the division. Jets second. I picked the Bills over the Jets because, frankly, I like their coach more. Bills and Jets, though. Same coach, same coordinators, same quarterback. AFC North, Ravens first, Steelers second. Big Ben comes back, but he was off a year. Ravens have almost no new changes offensively. AFC South, Texans, Titans, flip a coin. I like Deshaun Watson more than Ryan Tannehill, so I'd probably go with the Texans over the Titans. AFC West, Kansas City should be an overwhelming favorite. And I would say the Las Vegas Raiders. Gruden's back. The band's together. Here's Derek Carr. Raiders, I think at least early in the season, it's an advantage. In the NFC, Eagles, Cowboys. Now, the Cowboys have a new head coach. I think that hurts a game or two. Eagles, Cowboys would be my order. NFC North, Green Bay first, Minnesota second. Minnesota's got a new offensive coordinator. Again, no OTAs. Less time equals less preparation equals less chemistry. NFC South, it's a big win for the Saints and the Atlanta Falcons. Not as much Tampa, Brady, and Arians, who I think will be productive, but I think it could get very ugly in early September. NFC West, Niners have better personnel. I'd say they're one. Seattle, second. Now, the Rams are unique where you get Goff and McVay, but they've had a lot of roster changes to key spots. They've got a new defensive coordinator. I think they have a new special teams coach. They have a new offensive coordinator. So I see too many. And Todd Gurley's gone. So I think Niners, Seattle have an edge because of continuity over the L.A. Rams. So I guess my point is, you know, and for the record, outside of the Patriots, when I list those standings, you know what's interesting? It's mostly the same as last year. It is mostly the same standings as last year, New England being the huge exception. Let me shift to this. By the way, 50 minutes from now, Colin Wright, Colin Wrong, NFL Free Agency Edition. So Tom Brady's gone in New England, but it should be noted. I said last week, I think what they're going to do is like Miami did last year. Create a culture, or in New England's case, maintain it, not be very good at quarterback, and it's playing hard, playing to win, but losing, and knowing you're going to lose. So the Patriots, Brady's gone, but it's a $23 million dead money hit. That is so on New England. They have no quarterback, bottom three or four teams in the league in weapons. I don't think their defense is going to be quite as good. Andy Dalton was on the market, by the way. Andy Dalton is better than Jarrett Stidham right now. And he's better than Brian Hoyer, who they brought back yesterday. Why doesn't New England go after Andy Dalton? Playoff experience, cheap, better than what you have. Why? It's tanking for Trevor Lawrence. Tanking for Trevor. Now, they're not going to call it tanking. Miami played hard. They created a culture. They won five of their last nine games in Miami. But they knew, ultimately, remember what Miami did before the season started? Joy remembers this. She lived in Miami a long time. We follow the Dolphins closely. They started moving pieces, moving guys, creating a younger team, knowing, hey, it's my first year, Brian Flores. I got to create a culture. You don't have to win to create a culture. You don't have to win to create a culture. You go back to Belichick's first year. He was creating a culture and they were 5-11. So if you look at New England also, Belichick looks at his schedule. For the first time ever in New England, it's ranked as the toughest in the NFL. They go to the Rams. They go to Seattle. They go to Kansas City. They go to Houston. They face the Ravens and the Niners and Denver's defense. Again, why aren't they going after Andy Dalton? He's cheap. He's better than what you got. Why? ask yourself, how many teams next year in the NFL do we know are going to be bad? There's not many. The Jags also appear to be pulling a Miami of last year. They're thin at quarterback. They've traded top players. They're very young. Jags are not going to be a good football team. We know the Bengals have a rookie quarterback. They'll draft Burrow. They have a second-year head coach. The division has gotten better. Everybody's better. The Browns are better. The Ravens are better. The Steelers get Big Ben back. And we know they have the weakest roster. The Bengals will not be good next year, with or without Joe Burrow. The Jags will not be good. My guess is the Redskins won't be great. You know, Ron Rivera is not a magician. At this point, Dwayne Haskins. You know, if they went 8-8 this morning, wouldn't we all acknowledge, wow, Haskins worked. This is great. 8-8 would be great. So I think there's about three teams in the NFL, and I think keep your eye on the Giants struggling because new coach, young quarterback. But by and large, New England can play hard, accumulate draft picks, lose close games. They're not very good at quarterback. They're not very good at weapons. Slightly worse on special teams. They go 6-10. They maintain their culture. They maintain it. They still outwork everybody in the room. They lose. They don't have enough offensive weapons in an offensive league. And you look up and New England's losing a lot of 24-20 games. Very interesting. Patriots never interested in Andy Dalton. That tells me they got a plan. And the plan is maintain the culture, play your arse off. 6-10. It's not going to be a lot of bad teams in this league this year. Not a lot of tire fires. And you end up in the top 6 or 7 pick. You get a quarterback. Because remember, not everybody who's at the top of next year's draft, Cincinnati's going to be bad. They don't need a quarterback if they draft Burrow. The Giants could be bad. They don't need a quarterback. They got Daniel Jones. Jacksonville is the only team this morning I wake up and think, gonna be bad, would draft a quarterback. A lot of those bad teams are getting quarterbacks this year. Cincinnati's getting a quarterback. Giants just got a quarterback. If Dwayne Haskins works, if he goes 7-9, 500, they're not drafting a quarterback. I think New England has a plan. I think Belichick thinks about everybody. And my guess is that's their direction.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio, FS1, and the iHeartRadio app.
So there was this story. It's down to the Chargers, which I sourced. Yes, they wanted Brady. And the Buccaneers. We broke the story on that. We got lucky. Somebody I dearly trust said the Raiders were interested. Tom wasn't interested there, but they were interested. Well, according to Vic Tafer of the Athletic.com, he's a very good writer, Vic Tafer, he said, the Raiders were not out of the running, regardless of what you lead. The Raiders indeed sniffed around Brady as late as last week, according to league sources. They never made him an offer, but some ballpark numbers were made known to him at some point. So it's interesting. I like Derek Carr. Don't love him, like him. I think he's a poor man's Tony Romo, but there's something there. But I was thinking this morning, I'm like, has there ever been a quarterback that we think is talented, Derek Carr's talented, has some skills, he's got skills, he's completing 70% of his throws, but gets less love from his team? And I thought, oh, wait, we've seen this before. This is Kirk Cousins in Washington. So Derek Carr has a losing record in Oakland, but he's got a winning season. And Kirk Cousins had a losing record in Washington, but he had a couple winning seasons. They are largely the same guy. Nice guys, almost an aw shucks quality. Competitive, feisty, average arm, not great athletes, but can move a little. Lower ceiling, high completion percentage, very coachable. But there's some doubters in the locker room among players. There's doubters upstairs that they have a low ceiling. And in the end, both tend to play it safe and underachieve, shrink a little in big spots. They're the same guy. And a Gruden, basically, one Gruden, Jay, didn't like Kirk Cousins in Washington, and John Gruden in Oakland will say nice things, but doesn't love him in Oakland / Las Vegas. I think Derek Carr, who I like more than Kirk Cousins by a smidge, not by much, they're kind of the same guy in this league. They're franchise quarterbacks. They work hard, very accurate. Some of the guys in the room kind of roll their eyes. The executives like them, don't love them. Washington wouldn't sign Cousins when they had a chance to a big deal. And you and I know this morning, if Gruden had to put pen to paper with Derek Carr, he wouldn't. So just a little update. The Raiders were more interested in Derek Carr than many are reporting. Vic Tafer of TheAthletic.com has the story.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific.
We do it every Monday. Now, there's not a lot of sports, and I'm not sure how many Mondays we can keep doing this, but we do have a free agent edition of Colin Wright, Colin Wrong on a Monday.
Where Colin was right?
Well, was it Tuesday that we were 6 hours ahead of anybody? We got Tom Brady going to Tampa Bay. For the first time in my career, I broke an NFL story without an NFL source. It was somebody who plays in a different stratosphere. He knows Tom, and he said, he's all in. He's going to Tampa. You know, I thought to myself, well, I'm going to look incredibly foolish, which has happened from time to time, or I'm going to break Big J journalism. So I kept texting, and he lined it all up, and everything he said was true. And we got the story on that one, which is, you know, nice job, everybody.
Where Colin was wrong.
The problem was I never thought Tom Brady was leaving New England. I still think he would have stayed, but Bill Belichick stoned him on a phone call. Was very abrupt. That story's out now. They also couldn't land Stephon Diggs. I think Brady, as Albert Breer came on our show and said, he wanted to stay. He was going to listen. He was waiting to see what happened in that March 16th, 18th window. But I was really surprised. Not shocked, but, I mean, in the end, he's a creature of habit, and he went from prep school rigid New England to public schooled wild crazy kids in Tampa. Before Tuesday, I didn't really think Tampa was a site, so I whiffed on that one.
Where Colin was right?
We keep saying, if the Cowboys love Dak, why aren't they signing him? Well, last week they gave $100 million to Amari Cooper, potentially. This goes back. I don't care what you say. I care what you do. The Cowboys are paying running backs 2 years early, injured linebackers a year early, good receivers, not superstars, Amari Cooper, $100 million. They've paid everybody but Dak. I've always said, those New England-Philadelphia road losses, zero touchdown drives, when Dak had significantly better offensive line, running back, and weapons, Jerry Jones got on that private jet with Steven flying home, and they pushed the pause button on it. So you can keep telling me everybody loves Dak, but I'm going to believe your actions, not your words, and Dallas has signed everybody but Dak.
Where Colin was wrong.
I thought the Colts were going to address quarterback in this draft. I thought that I knew Cincinnati was and Miami was and the Chargers were. I thought the Colts were. I don't really get the Phillip Rivers thing. I wouldn't have made it, but also they gave up a first-round pick to get a defensive lineman, so the quarterbacks that will be left are not, to me, unless somebody pops and shocks the world, I don't think we're going to have a Drew Brees in the second round. I love Chris Ballard. I think he's terrific. But it does feel a little bit here like you're putting your problems on a credit card. You're going to have to address them and pay the bill next year. And again, I think the Colts are just too darn good with Phillip Rivers. They're going to be a 500 team, right? Well, they're not going to be, and nobody, you know, the teams that are going to need a quarterback, Jacksonville, New England, I don't think they're moving down. So this move I don't get, and I don't love it.
Where Colin was right?
I never felt there'd be a big market for Cam. It's smaller than I thought, but this goes back, you know, people are saying with Cam Newton, and I've never been a big fan. I think he's an average quarterback who had a spectacular year. You know, it's like who was the guy that played for the Baltimore Orioles years ago? Brady Anderson, good player, hit 50 jacks 1 year. I mean, good players have great years. Cam's good. He's not great. Never has been. Doesn't win enough. Not accurate enough. Gets hurt a lot. He's a little bit higher maintenance, but the media has been nice to Cam, forgiving with Cam. There's not much of a market. People say, well, you know, he can't get a physical. If Russell Wilson couldn't get a physical, if Lamar Jackson couldn't get a physical, if Patrick Mahomes couldn't get a physical, you think they'd be unsigned? The reality is with Cam, he had a small market. The physical, the virus doesn't help him. But most people in the NFL believe what I thought, which is great year, not a great quarterback, older, getting banged up, not worth much, and nobody wants to build around him.
Where Colin was wrong.
I keep thinking OBJ being traded by the Browns makes so much sense, but last week they came out and the new people said, no, we're keeping him. I mean, Cleveland has major O-line issues. You can't address all of them in the draft. And they have major linebacker issues. I like their roster, but those are areas of concern. And they have more than enough skill people. They just got Austin Hooper from Atlanta, a tight end. So they have David Njoku and Hooper at tight end. Jarvis Landry, two good backs. They may draft another receiver. They don't need OBJ. And Baker and OBJ completed only 55% of their throws. It doesn't work. OBJ tends to be a little bit of an ad libber. Baker Mayfield, when forced ad lib, makes too many mistakes. Cleveland appears to like him. It's not even their guy. They can move off this easily and say, we didn't bring him in. I keep saying this is going to happen. The past group said it's not going to happen. This group, they're keeping him. I don't get it, but I'm wrong.
Where Colin was right.
Kept saying last year, Todd Gurley, Rams, don't buy into this. Don't tell me there. It's fine. It's a bunch of nonsense. I'm hearing it's not fine. Well, the Rams basically released him. He can still play a little. I mean, seriously, he's 25. He can play. And it's a $20 million cap hit, dead money. How, if it's so great, why would you cut a guy in a position of need that can still play a little? He's still a great pass catcher at running back. And it's $20 million of dead money? And you don't have a lot of first-round picks next few years? It tells you it got uncomfortable in the room. I'm not saying Gurley's a bad guy. But he got his money, he got hurt, and something changed. And the Rams were trying to sell this as it's, oh, we're just one big happy family. You don't release a guy, $20 million dead cap money, who can still play a little bit, maybe more than a little, unless something was wrong.
Where Colin was wrong.
Kirk Cousin got a two-year extension. I don't get it. 0-9 on Monday Night Football, 2-10 against winning teams. We know he's at least the third best quarterback in his division. Aaron Rodgers and Matt Stafford are more talented. And Nick Foles is now in the division, and he was the Super Bowl MVP. And is often better in big games. I like Minnesota. I like their front office. I love their roster. It's a Super Bowl roster. They've hit a ceiling. The NFC's only going to be better. I don't get it. I thought they were moving on. And they're the kind of team that could move players and trade players and move up in the draft. No Jordan Love. I don't get it.
Where Colin was right.
You know, we said a month ago, keep your eye on the Broncos. They're not that far off. They won four of their last five. Last 12 weeks, they were 7-5 and had 5 one-possession losses. Well, have you seen what they have done this offseason? Melvin Gordon's in. Jarrell Casey, defensive lineman's in. A.J. Bouye, the cornerback, is in. They think they're close as well. I like this roster a lot. I think it's much closer than people think. They're my surprise team in the NFL next year. And, by the way, Bradley Chubb comes back with Von Miller, now Jarrell Casey. You don't want any part of that defensive line. I think Denver knows and Elway knows. We found our quarterback. We're going all in. I think Denver's telling you, we're good. We're better than you think. We're going all in. And I think he's right.
Where Colin was right.
The Chicago Bears traded a draft pick and inherited 2 to 3 years of a massive Nick Foles contract. Why? Translation, we're not giving Trubisky another contract. Folks, Bear fans, you have a good team, but your front office whiffed on this one. They whiffed. It happens. Belichick whiffs. Just own it. All this is telling you is that Matt Nagy and Ryan Pace, coach and GM, are telling you, listen, we think Foles is a better thrower of the football. We like our weapons, and we've hit a very low ceiling. And we can't beat Aaron Rodgers twice a year and Matt Stafford and Kirk Cousins if we got the fourth best quarterback in a division. So by giving up a draft pick and paying Nick Foles for at least 2 years, it's telling you they're not paying Trubisky. They can tell you they're in on it. They're not in on Trubisky.
Want more Herd? The Herd streams 24 hours a day, 7 days a week within the iHeartRadio app. Search Herd to listen live or on demand whenever you'd like.
Terry Bradshaw is one of my favorite people at Fox, a Hall of Famer back in the 80s. You know, we talk about the draft. He was taken number one in 1970 by the Steelers and then played 14 years for Pittsburgh. Four-time Super Bowl champ, multiple-time Super Bowl MVP. And right, by the way, this morning or this afternoon, wherever you're at, Terry, are you in Oklahoma? Are you in Florida? Where are you?
I'm in Florida.
Okay.
Yeah. Florida.
Yeah. You know, you played 14 years with one team, and you were, and it was mostly really a good story. Were you a tad shocked with Tom going to Tampa?
Oh, man. Yeah, I would say so, for sure. I was shocked that he left New England. That made no sense. After 20 seasons to be leaving New England. So what's the problem, right?
Yeah.
So there's a problem. You don't leave New England unless there's a problem. And so to me, there had to be a rift. He's tired of Belichick's demanding ways. Belichick may have been tired of him after 20 years. That's very likely. You know, two people, from what I have heard, similar. Tom's real demanding as far as the offensive game plan, and Belichick's real demanding as a head coach. So maybe it's best that they move on with their lives. Belichick will continue coaching, but I thought that Tom would never leave New England. That made no sense to me. It's not a, you know, it's not a Brett Favre thing when he leaves Green Bay, because they had Aaron Rodgers,
right?
And they were ready to move on. And Favre almost beat, you know, almost got Minnesota when he went to Minnesota into the Super Bowl, but they lost to the Saints. And then he went to New York Jets. You look at Montana going to Kansas City, he got them in the playoffs. But they had Steve Young behind Montana. And then you look at Johnny Unitas going to San Diego, and that was just not necessary. John's career was way over, and should have never done that. But name it, and you look at Burke Jones. There's, you know, various reasons why players move to teams, but this is one that made no sense to me whatsoever. I did not understand why they would do it. And my only, and I don't think I'm wrong. I think it's just a personal thing. I think Tom had enough of him, and Bill probably had enough of Tom. And Tom thinks, you know, he'll take his talents down to Tampa Bay, and they've got great receivers, and the coach down there is an offensive-minded coach who's been great with Roethlisberger. He was great in Indianapolis. I mean, with the Colts. Coach of the year there, actually, before going to Arizona. So Tom will go into a system that's going to be beneficial to him, and it'll have to be. But he's 40, you know, listen, you say he is 43 years old. He is not a hard body. He's not someone that pounds weight. He does the flexibility, and he does all those things, and he, I don't know what he does, but he's not a weightlifter, and he's not a guy that can avoid sacks. He's good in the pocket, moving around, but his athletic skills outside of that are pretty nil. He doesn't have much.
Yeah.
Because his athletic skills are not very good. Never have been very good.
You know, but Terry, it's interesting. You know, Bill Belichick clearly lacks some warmth. You know, you had a coach who was a great coach, like Belichick, a legend, but didn't put his arms around you and hug you much. So you, I could make the argument, Terry, that you know what that's like after 14 years. And Chuck Knoll, did it sometimes wear on you that you just occasionally, you're a fun-loving guy, Tom's a family fun-loving guy, and the coach never puts his arms around you? It does wear on you.
Yeah, it does, but I wasn't ever going to go anywhere. I was going to retire. But listen, I told my father, I'm going to play for one team, and that's it. So after 9 years, if Chuck and I couldn't coexist, then I would have retired. I was not going to another team. I never wanted to go to another team. And, you know, they're both denying the rift, but come on, it just makes no sense.
Right.
Common sense tells you that probably both of them needed to step apart and to move on. But not like this. I just thought the time should retire or stay there in New England. Listen, if you apply the ego to this, Tom Brady probably, and we all want to be told how great we are. I'm not going to lie to you. I would have loved to have been said, hey, we can't live without you. You're the best. You're everything we ever needed in a quarterback. But, you know, that's just childish and immature. That's not something you grow to understand. I know I'm good. I don't need to be told by a head coach. And I just think that this is unfortunate. I just Now, and I'm not saying I don't want it to work. I'm just saying I just think this is unfortunate.
Yeah.
I never thought Brady would move on, but obviously he's. If he would tell the truth, he would tell you. If Robert Kraft and Bill Belichick would have come out and said, "We got in love with you, need you. We love you. We're no team without you," and just I'm sure he would have stayed. Maybe you're right, Colin. Maybe he needed some love.
I mean, you know, athletes are different, you know, and people, by the way, are different. I was different in my 20s when I was single than when I had kids and was married. And, you know, Tom has maybe evolved and Bill's not going to evolve for anybody. And then, you know, stuff happens. You know what's funny about this stuff, Terry? I don't remember. So my theory on this is the teams that have an advantage, because we're not going to have OTAs with this virus. We're just not.
Right.
We may have a very abridged preseason. I'm hoping we have a season. I think the NBA season's not going to happen. But I think about this. When you don't have OTAs and you have an abridged camp, it's going to be a benefactor to the veteran head coaches and quarterbacks that have worked together, like Pete Carroll and Russell Wilson, you know, that Doug Peterson and Wentz now of 3 or 4 years. Go back. That's my gut feeling. But go back to when you played. Does an OTA matter? Does a camp matter that much once you've worked together for a while?
No, not at all. I didn't need we didn't have OTAs. We had a quarterback camp. We came into town after the draft for 4 days. And even at the end of my career, I opted out of that because I didn't need that. So, you know, you don't. A veteran football team or a veteran head coach and a veteran quarterback and people in place, with most of these guys in Tampa, for example, we're going to talk about Brady. They won't need OTAs. I mean, they'll need two seasons. He'll have to learn the offense. He'll have to, and he will. He's a smart man. He's got a coach down there that's going to help him. They'll have to adjust their offense because he's not someone that's going to be able to hold the football. And he will pick up on this. Now, they'll say, well, we've got to get our timing together. You don't need your timing together. The guy runs a 4.6. He runs a 4.6. You don't need to work time. If he runs a 4.3, he runs a 4.3. You play with players like that. And that's real easy to adjust. This whole thing about I got to get used to my receivers has nothing to do with timing. It all has to do with routes and whether they break it off at 10 or 12. That's the critical point. Whether they run a quick post at 8 or 12. Whether they break to the corner at 14 or 16. These are the little things that you pick up on, and they're not that hard to adjust to at all.
You know, you're one of the most social people I've ever met in my life. You love people. You love being around them. Has this social distancing been tough for you?
I can't believe you said that. Because my daughter's here with me and her husband and the grandkids and they're homeschooling, so the teacher's here. And my wife, we were sitting there having coffee this morning, and my daughter goes, "You know, Dad, we don't ever have to have conversations with you." I said, "Why is that?" She said, "Because you just start talking and you'll say, what do you say today? You say you want to play golf today? Okay, we'll play golf today. What do you think, about 2 o'clock? Okay, let's play about 2 o'clock. Now you'll go this and you'll go that. What do you say? Y'all like that? I think it's a good idea." And they said, "You just talk."
I know, and now, well, the good news is you got your family around you, so that's the good news.
I am lucky in that I have my wife, one of my daughters, got a grandkids here, and my one son-in-law went back Sunday, and then I talked to my other two girls, and I said, "Look, we'll get you down here if we're stuck down here for a couple of weeks, we'll get a plane up there and get you down here."
Yeah.
So we can be together. So it's been, you listen, it's tough on me. It's tough on everybody. It goes, you know what happens, Colin, the longer this goes, the scarier it gets. And then you say, you know, how do you respond to this? This is some scary stuff. What's my reaction? Well, we went and worked out this morning, Tammy and I did. And we're outside and we walk in forever and we're around no one. And so that's cool. When we've gone in and had to go in to get food, we've done it the same way. We're very careful. And other than that, we have, you're exactly right. There's, you can't go out. I talked to my brother on the phone a while ago, and he said he might come by in a couple of days, pretending. So it's, everybody just sits, and it's good to sit. But I've seen head coaches quit football and say, I'm going to spend more time with my family. And a year later, they go, well, head coaching. Why are they back to head coaching? Because that quality time with their family. They drove them back.
Yeah. But, you know, thank God for the NFL draft, because I've always been a fan of the draft.
Yeah.
You were you were number one, 1970. It was a whole different world. So this year, they're going to it. They're going to mostly do it on the phone this year. Tell the story. You've told it before. Tell the story of where you were, which is unbelievable, because your games weren't on TV. You had very limited Terry Bradshaw. All these major USCs and Alabamas and Texas and Oklahoma, Nebraska, and you get drafted number one that morning. Tell the story of when you got the call.
Well, I did not know my father got a phone call from George Halas at 4 a.m. saying they were trying to make a trade with Pittsburgh and they were going to draft me. Now, I got up earlier. I got dressed, got my truck, got my boat out, got it all loaded up. I was headed out of the driveway at my parents' house. I was going fishing because the sand bass had schooled up on Toledo Bend, and I knew where those sandbars were, and I was going fishing. And Mike Phipps and I used to fish in the off season together. So I'm going fishing, and my dad came out. I was backing out, and my dad says, where are you going? I said, Dad, I'm going fishing. He said, you can't go fishing today. I said, well, why not? And I told him that sandbars, the sand bass have schooled up and so on and so forth. And he says, I got a call from George Halas, and they're trying to make a trade with Pittsburgh and to take you at the first pick. And I went, Dad, you know, really? Come on. That ain't going to happen. I figured third, fourth round at the best.
Wow.
And I figured New Orleans, because they had spent all this time with me for 2 years. Never heard of Pittsburgh, never heard of Chicago. And I didn't know anything about the draft because, quite honestly, it was, hell, nobody knew about the draft. It was the Louisiana Tech. But, you know, I was certainly aware of it, and I knew the draft was coming up and it was going to happen that day, but I had no idea that it was that big a deal. That's why I was going fishing.
God, that's incredible. Well, it shows you, by the way.
That's a good story.
No, it shows you how talented you were, that people didn't even have tape on. Everybody at these big schools, to some degree, feels like they're overdrafted. To be number one, never play a TV game, is remarkable. He's a Hall of Famer since the 80s. Terry Bradshaw, best of luck to you and your family, and I hope we talk soon, Terry.
Okay. So to be, just call me. Look, I'm just here for you, buddy. You know I love you. Just call me. You never had me on your show. You had to have me on your show at the Super Bowl, and I appreciate that. But every now and then, it just makes me feel good when I'm on your show.
So have me
on the show.
There we go.
All right?
All right, buddy.
Yeah. Terry. I'll sing a song. I swear I will. I'll tell some jokes, whatever it takes. I'm here for you, and you know it.
I know it.
All right.
We've never needed your talent.
Are you doing the show? Are you at home?
No, I'm at his radio studio in L.A., and Joy Taylor's in her house, and you know what, we're making, you know what, you just figure it out. That's what you do. You figure it out.
I know. Crazy. Yeah. All right,
buddy.
All right, well, I'm right here.
All right.
And all your listeners out there, you know, just read Psalms 23 twice a day, and you're going to be in good shape, okay?
Psalms.
That's what I'm passing on to you, okay?
Psalms 23 twice a day. All right, Terry, thank you.
Read it.
All right.
It's in the Bible.
All right.
Read it.
All right.
All right.
Thank you.
All right.
Got to go find one of those.